The band known as Sticky Fingers bills itself as the leading international Rolling Stones tribute show. The guys in the band look and sometimes act the part on and off stage. Since the Broadway musical Beatlemania, tribute bands like Sticky Fingers are here to stay. Stephen Kuritz writes about the phenomenon in a book called Like a Rolling Stone. He told Steve Paulson how he met the lead singer of Sticky Fingers.
I picked a few bands, and one of the bands was Sticky Fingers, and I met this guy, Glenn Carroll. I went up to his house in Massachusetts, and the experience of meeting him, he lived in this big house. He had a beautiful girlfriend. There were pictures on the wall of him with various, you know, 70s-era classic rockers like Edgar Winter and Rick Derringer. It was like meeting a rock star that you just never heard of. And so I really became fascinated with him as a character and with his life as sort of a, you know, a pretend rock star.
And he's the stand-in for Mick Jagger.
Yes, he's the stand-in for Mick Jagger, exactly.
And how far does he take that imitation?
Well, you know, he takes it pretty far. Certainly on stage, he has all the clothes and he has the football pants and the knee pads that Mick wore on the 81 tour and the scarves and the Omega t-shirt that Mick wore on the 69 tour. And then in his own life, there are times when he occasionally sort of subconsciously dips into a Cockney accent. So it can, you know, he definitely approaches his role methodically.
Well, you write about how when you first started following Sticky Fingers, they had a new Keith who the other band members were very excited about. They called him the Keithiest of them all.
Yes, the Keithiest Keith. And he certainly was the Keithiest Keith. And a little over a year that I spent with the band, I saw him out of his Keith wardrobe once. And it was sort of a shock to see him in standard dress. But, you know, I would pick him up for shows 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning on a street corner in Manhattan, and he'd already be dressed like Keith Richards. He really took his role seriously. And he almost seemed more comfortable as Keith and in the Keith clothing. And he has great charisma. Somehow I sort of describe him as a superhero in civilian dress when he was out of his... He was sort of deflated somehow.
What do you make of these guys who devote their lives to impersonating famous rock stars?
Well, you know, I'm very sympathetic to the tribute performers. I don't think I could have written the book had I not been. You know, they really wanted to be... Most of these guys, they didn't set out to be Keith or Mick in Sticky Fingers. They set out to be rock stars. They set out to be the next Mick and Keith. And, you know, it just didn't happen. And the odds of that are so ridiculous that this was sort of the next best thing.
Can these guys make a living doing this?
There's a certain echelon, I would say maybe 10%, that are sort of the top tier tribute bands. And absolutely, they're making a living at it. I mean, Glenn Carroll has been Mick Jagger since around 1989, 1990, as a living, full-time. I mean, that's his job. And the other band that I followed, the Blushing Brides, they go back to 1978, and they had done it for a living. And there's a band, a Grateful Dead band, called Dark Star Orchestra, and they gross over $1 million a year. They have their own tour bus, their own merch man, their own manager and booking agent. They sell CDs. They play in soft seat theaters. So for the upper echelon of tribute bands, you can make a living at it. The majority of them are guys who have day jobs and are weekend rock stars.
Of course, it helps for the Grateful Dead tribute band that the Grateful Dead is no longer around. I mean, Rolling Stones are still out there. They still perform. Are they aware of these tribute bands?
I think they're probably alternately weirded out and flattered. There was this moment. It was a wonderful moment where the Rolling Stones were playing this big arena in Charlotte, and literally a block and a half away, Sticky Fingers was playing the pre-concert party at Dixie's Tavern in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I sat there, and there were helicopters sort of flying around and big lights going on for the Stones. And if you closed your eyes, you know, you could mistake all the fuss for Sticky Fingers, you know. And I sort of wondered if Mick Jagger and Keith Richards would sort of stroll over the block and a half from the arena to Dixie's Tavern and watch the proxies of themselves on stage. It didn't happen, but I sort of fantasized that it would.
Now, you clearly have a lot of affection for these tribute bands, especially for Sticky Fingers. You hung out with the group a lot. But was there also a part of you that felt kind of, I don't know, sad about this? That somehow these people were, I don't want to say delusional, but they'd kind of wasted their life in some ways?
Well, you know, I like lovable losers. That's often who I find myself writing about. You know, so I did find it sad, but I didn't find, it wasn't depressing to me that it was sad. But there is sort of a melancholy aspect to these guys. I can think of a couple examples. One of the guys in Sticky Fingers, who was really charismatic and, you know, did sort of have a rock star vibe to him. He was in his late 30s, or he is in his late 30s. He lived in a little house on the Jersey Shore that he was sharing with somebody. He drove sort of a beat-up old car. And he had done it so long that at that point, he was sort of unwilling or unable, really, to go straight and get sort of a regular day job. You know, so he's playing in these cover bands. And at one moment in the book, we're sitting in a frat house at the end of a show, and of course there's sort of spilt beer all over the floor and college co-eds making out on the stairwell. And he just sort of turned to me and he said, "What happened to me? You know, I was supposed to be a rock star." And, you know, it just sort of hit home that it wasn't, being in Sticky Fingers was fun, but it was for him somewhat of an empty calorie that, you know, or even a reinforcement each time he did those gigs that he hadn't fulfilled his dreams.
You know, in some ways, if they do play a big concert, now that was very unusual, but in front of 11,000 people, probably
right,
their experience was not that different from the Rolling Stones themselves. I mean, if you want to try to get a little philosophical about this, I guess I wonder if even the Stones sometimes have to try to be the Stones. I mean, there's an image of the Stones in some ideal sense. And I mean, every time Mick Jagger and Keith Richards go out there, they sort of have to live up to that.
You're absolutely right. There's a point where if you've been a band long enough, you sort of become a tribute of yourself. If you've seen one Stone show, you've seen them all. There are all these little cues that happen, like Keith Richards does a little set and the crowd sort of yells Keith affectionately and he stumbles up to the microphone, you know, as if he is half drunk. And Mick is going to sashay around and move his hips and they're going to play Satisfaction. And they are, in a sense, a tribute show to themselves. You know, and the other thing is, like, let's say you go see Leonard Skinner. Well, you know, three or four of the guys in the original Leonard Skinner are dead, and you're seeing 3/7 of the original Leonard Skinner. And really, what's the difference between seeing 3/7 of Leonard Skinner and seeing like a really smoking Leonard Skinner tribute band? I think the difference is sort of negligible, really.
Now, on the other hand, there were some big concerts that the Sticky Fingers had. You say that once they played in front of 11,000 people in Rotterdam.
They did. And the next night, Bruce Springsteen played the same arena. Which gives you a sense of the ups and downs of a tribute band. I mean, you could be at a frat house, you know, one weekend, and you can be flown to Rotterdam and picked up in a limo and playing in a packed arena the next. And that was a high for all of them. I mean, that was an amazing experience. They had, you know, a professional sound crew and a pyro show. And, you know, they got to experience really what it was like to be a rock star in a real way, not in sort of the low-rent version. You know, and the other thing I'll just sort of say on this point is that the thing I admired in Glenn Carroll, the sort of the driving engine of Sticky Fingers and the Mick, was that by sheer persistence, he had carved out a small little corner of himself in rock and roll history. I mean, here he is, now he's on the cover of a book. There are sort of 20 years worth of frat kids who seeing Sticky Fingers is sort of a big part of their college experience. And Glenn has played with, He shared the stage with classic rockers like Alice Cooper and Foreigner. So in some way, even though it's sort of second best, and even though he probably would have rather been the next Mick Jagger and not a Mick Jagger clone, he has carved out a little spot for himself in the music world.
Stephen Kuritz is a journalist and author of the book Like a Rolling Stone, The Strange Life of a Tribute Band.